The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Green Front, and thanks for coming together for this edition of our program, this special Earth Day, Earth Week, Earth Month edition. Of course, this is the week we celebrate Earth Day. Those of us tuned into our environment, celebrate it, observe it, worry about it, lose sleep over it every day in terms of what's happening to our embattled planet, which, of course, is our home, which, of course, is our life support system. But you would not necessarily believe that if you were just watching what's going on in Washington, D.C., except for a very exciting, encouraging, optimistic gathering this past weekend called Power Shift 2011. Some 10,000 youth concerned about climate change and determined to get people off their gases converged, and there were some very powerful presentations. Going to play some of them for you in our second half. Bill McKibben was on fire. Hopefully get Van Jones's speech and a couple of others from Green for All. Phaedra Ellis-Lampkin's speech was just gives you goosebumps. So going to get them all hopefully to play for you in the second half rather than try to get people on the phone who were there. You have to hear them yourself. They're worth playing. So going to bring that to you in the second half. In the first half, we're going to take a look at the other significant event this week, and that is the one-year anniversary, the commemoration. Certainly nothing to celebrate, but absolutely something to stop, pause, and commemorate, because not only did the explosion, the Deepwater Horizon, of course, explosion off the Gulf Coast happen a year ago, but it's the day that 11 oil workers lost their lives, and that, of course, was on the heels of the destructive and fatal coal mine disaster where 24 coal miners lost their lives just a year ago last week, and then, of course, we've seen the Japanese disaster. So it really has been a confluence of events, Mother Nature, it seems, trying to tell us something. You decide what it is, but certainly this is a good time to stop, pause, and see what the last year has wrought, what we have learned, what we have not learned. And so my first guest is going to help me put all that in perspective, and we'll even drill down a bit first on the BP disaster, because not only is that, again, the anniversary we're commemorating today, but LG Holstein is also an expert on oil issues as well as nuclear, so we will be getting a bit of an update on the situation in Japan still unfolding. LG Holstein is joining me now. He is the Senior Director of Strategic Planning with Environmental Defense Fund, and I'm thrilled to have him here to help me just pause and see where we are and what has transpired, what has come down. And there's all kinds of depressing news, of course, about all the damage that has been wrought and really how the politics and the polarization in Washington is making things seem a little bit hopeless, just as Mother Nature, again, seems to be screaming, pay attention to where our energy comes from, and a perfect storm of events showing us that human error and worst-case scenarios do, in fact, happen. And yet there was something very encouraging, and that's the activism that's rising up. Again, we're going to be talking about that in our second half. But first, I want to welcome LG Holstein. Hopefully he's with me now to the Green Front.
I'm with you. Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you. And first, let's go back to a year ago when many of us were tuning into CNN and seeing that there had been a offshore oil rig that had exploded. Could we have possibly known then that 3 months later it would finally be capped? 11 lives lost, how many millions of gallons leaked into the ocean, and now that it's been a year and some 9 months since that the emergency part of it stopped, you know, how much can we tell about the damage left behind in the wake, not only to marine life but also to the fishing and tourism industries there? Let's start with just you know, overall perspective on a year later. You know, how does this? It still ranks as it went on. Of course, it got labeled the worst oil disaster in U.S. history. But have we forgotten about it? You know, have other stories, you know, crowded that out of the headline and the national psyche? Certainly it shouldn't, but sometimes it feels like we are, you know, just an ADD culture where we have short-term memories. Not that we forgot, but, you know, people are still driving around where I live, you know, in big SUVs and complaining about the gas prices, yes, but we are seeing, you know, oil drilling about to get, I think, opened up again. That's possible. And what lessons, you know, have we learned? I guess I just ask you to share your thoughts just sort of from the 30,000-foot view.
You bet. Those are all great questions. And thinking back as I listened to your comments to a year ago, Betsy, I'm reminded that even those of us in the environmental movement had no idea, no guess, no conjecture that the oil spill would last for 3 months. Even we believed that the technology that is deployed on modern oil platforms would be sufficient to quickly bring that accident to a closure, a sad closure, given, as you noted, and let's never forget, 11 workers did lose their lives, but that the environmental devastation that would occur and the long-term implications for our society's dependence on these traditional energy sources would be issues that would stay with us. So have we forgotten? I hope we have not forgotten. But if we have, I can say with a fair amount of certainty, a great deal of certainty, self-confidence in the judgment of history that worst-case scenarios happen and they keep on happening. And so we have an obligation, I think, as a society to ensure that we never get complacent, whether it's about oil drilling, nuclear power, or any other energy source, that we've somehow or another found the way forward that isn't going to pollute our environment. Continuous improvement and continuous attention to these issues are what are really demanded by this series of events.
You say complacent. That reminds me of a term I used to use. I called it the COD factor, COD, an acronym I made up for complacent, oblivious, and in denial. And you know, I use that to apply to President Bush when he was in office, but also just the American people. Sometimes, even still, with all that has come down, I get the feeling people just can't be bothered. Now the reason is, you know, the economy, and they're worried about jobs, and they're in kind of survival mode, and yet we so cannot afford to ignore, you know, it's not the environment. I say it's our environment. It's really big time about our energy consumption, our needs, peak oil, all these issues that it still seems they're not really, you know, the topics at the water cooler. They're still talking about, you know, Real Housewives and American Idol. At least that's my perception. So are we still in complacency somewhat? And BP being the just, you know, one of many, you know, significant catastrophes that have befallen us in the past year.
You know, even though we are still having terrible trouble with employment and economic conditions, uncertainty, I do believe that the American public wants us to stand as a nation, to stand by the environmental laws that we have on the books, and to keep our environmental values, not to throw them under the bus, so to speak, but to keep on working to improve our vehicles' efficiency, to make our homes and office buildings more energy efficient. And I'm delighted that the wind and solar and renewable energy sources are attracting the kind of investment they are from investment firms, from venture capitalists. I think those are all good signs that we as a society understand that we need to accelerate our transition to a clean energy future. So, yes, we go about our business. We have a busy society that's heavily depends upon consumers to keep consuming. But I do like to think that even in the midst of our busy lives and in this rough economy, that our citizens want us to fight for environmental protection. And I think that's what many of us are doing.
And do you have damage estimates a year later, you know, in the Gulf while we are talking about the aftermath of that spill? I mean, I know that a lot of it's not going to be a final tally because, as we've learned from the Exxon Valdez disaster, you know, it takes years to get the full impact, and they're still assessing it up there, again, not only, you know, on the fishing industry, but marine life, health of, you know, workers who cleaned up. It probably will be years before we know the full toll, but just, you know, what's a snapshot a year later?
The snapshot is that there is still difficulty, whether you're a shrimp fisherman trying to sell your shrimp outside the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf region. It was just yesterday, in fact, Betsy, that the U.S. government finally lifted the last restriction on fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. A year later. And so it's been 12 months that we've had at least some, and in many cases large expanses of the Gulf of Mexico closed to fishing. So we're paying an economic price, we're paying a price in terms of the ecosystem, but how big that price is going to be remains to be seen, not only because of how long it may take certain aspects of the economic system there to recover, but also because, as we learned with the Exxon Valdez up in Alaska, the oil tends to persist in the environment for many years. Even when you try to clean it up, it persists, it hides, and it does damage. And it will take us several years before we know what the extent of that damage is as we go through the life cycles of a number of kinds of fish and other animals that that depend upon the Gulf of Mexico for life. We also need to understand more about the impact that the oil will do on the precious wetlands that buffer New Orleans and other coastal communities. That's another potential loss at a time when we were already losing a football field of wetlands every 30 or 40 minutes, even before this oil spill occurred. So it's going to take us a while longer before we know what the extent of the damage really is.
And someone was quoted in an article today as saying the damage to the Gulf environment is turning out to be more subtle and elusive. You know, it may not be so hit you over the head obvious as, you know, 300 dolphins washing up on the beach and a lot of sea turtle deaths, but, you know, the larvae, the hidden, you know, over time impacts are going to take time to be fully realized.
That's exactly right, and it's not just because of the oil, but also because of the thousands and thousands of gallons of dispersant that were applied to the oil deep underwater, and so that created a mixture of oil and gas and chemical dispersant, the impacts of which are largely unknown, and the long-term effects are ones that we are going to have to study and monitor if we're going to have any understanding about what this accident really did to our environment.
And what about BP's cleanup job? What do you think of the way they handled the situation? Obviously, tons of criticism, deserved. But are they getting any better as the years unfolded, or are they still stalling and obfuscating and saying, you know, glossing it over?
I think there's plenty of blame to go around as far as the response to the oil spill is concerned, both in terms of the government regulators who were supposed to be protecting our environment, as well as the industry itself. And so, in answer to your question, one of the most important lessons we learned was that we shouldn't be out there drilling wells if we don't have the equipment to, A, ensure that the wells that we drill are going to be safe and are going to hold back the oil and gas that's down there under tremendous pressure. And second, we will need to ensure that we have the response equipment necessary in order to capture the oil if the worst case does occur. And we didn't have those things in the case of the BP blowout, and that is probably one of the most critical lessons we learned from that disaster.
And since your other area of expertise is nuclear, and it was not quite worst-case scenario, but a lot of things that should have been, you know, the fail-safe mechanisms obviously failed, and that was the triple hit in Japan, of course, the 9.0 earthquake followed by the unbelievably monstrous tsunami and the nuclear, are we calling that a partial meltdown? And it's been a little over a month since that chain of events occurred. You know, they're saying we just didn't plan for all this, and that's, of course, the concern is, you know, worst-case scenarios clearly do happen, we now know. So What's your sense, just a snapshot view of what's going on in Japan right now? I assume you've been following that more closely, since that is, again, one of your energy areas of expertise.
I think it's probably fair to call it a partial meltdown. We'll know more once we can, get a clearer picture of what actually happened inside those reactors. But of course, that drama is still ongoing, and nobody should be lulled into some sense of complacency that disaster is over with somehow. So what did we learn there? I think one of the things we learned is, again, attention to detail, revisiting our assumptions about worst-case scenarios, and continuous improvement both in the equipment that we use to generate our energy, in this case nuclear power, but also in the protocols we use in responding to the disasters that we hope don't happen, but when they do, can have catastrophic and long-lasting consequences.
Okay, now let's look at what's going on right now. I mean, sometimes I read the papers, I watch CNN, and I can't help, I have green glasses. I guess they're green lenses, really kind of sewed to my my eyeballs, because I see things through a green filter. Perhaps you do, too. This Saturday, I was reading the newspaper, the New York Times, and on the front page, there's an article about the beginning of this chain of killer tornadoes swept through North Carolina. I think in the end, more than 36 people were killed. Several children were killed. Homes were flattened. I mean, the most violent storm people remember having seen. Right next to that is an article about all the rollbacks, not only at the national level, but state level, of environmental regulations, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act under attack. Unfortunately, let's say what it is. It's mostly by, Republican legislators and Republican governors. Why are, at a time when we should be connecting the dots and seeing that climate change, has likely arrived on our shores, perhaps with Katrina being the first deadly example of that, when we should all be, concerned beyond, the usual day-to-day concern, in emergency mode, basically. Maybe we can't say with any certainty, I know, that storms are connected to climate change, but every week, it seems, there is news about yet another record storm, killer, destructive, more ferocious than usual, which is exactly what climate scientists have been predicted, more unstable weather, more intense storms. And at the same time, we're seeing rollbacks right and left, and political polarization and legislators playing politics with the planet. Those are the kind of things that can really make a girl's green blood boil. What about you? Are you noticing that there's some surreality to the situation right now, where Mother Nature seems to be, again, shouting, and yet we don't seem to be hearing or responding, at least not in terms of national and state leadership?
I couldn't agree more. I think you made some terribly important points, one of which is the science does tell us that climate change does produce both intensity and instability in weather patterns. And so one could debate about whether or not a particular weather event in a particular location was due to climate change or not. But one has to look at the science and see that increasingly, the evidence shows that what we're doing to the atmosphere has a direct and discernible impact on the weather patterns that bring us, in some cases, catastrophe, but in other cases, longer-term and disturbing changes in disease vectors, in agricultural losses, and other impacts associated with climate changing gases that we're emitting into the atmosphere. In the face of all of that, it is gravely disappointing that this issue has somehow or another become so politicized that the science and the scientists have a hard time being heard. And I think that's one of the greatest disappointments. It's as though some people don't want to even look at the science for fear that it may make the other team, as they see it, look like they were right, and we can't have that. We can't concede anything. We can't reach across the aisle. We can't work together to solve problems. I think we will pay the price for that if we don't find ways to reduce the amount of greenhouse gases that we're putting into the atmosphere. and accelerate our transition to a cleaner energy economy. Those are things we can do if we set our minds to it, and I think there are things that the Obama administration is fighting to preserve, as particularly the House of Representatives strives to gut the EPA authority to protect us from greenhouse gases, but also from other air pollutants. I think it's a terribly short-sighted view of what actually needs to be done.
And you say the other team, and it seems as if some people feel like we're just, you know, this is a football match or, you know, baseball game. And it's, you know, just one big experiment is what it really is. And if the scientists are right, which I suspect 97% of scientists probably do know what they're talking about more than, you know, Sean Hannity and the other deniosaurs, as I call them, you know, that we have done irreparable damage to the only home we know. And yet it still seems to be treated like it's just a game of who's up, you know, and who's got the last word. And we're not talking about children playing a game. We're talking about grown-ups, not only grown-ups, but representatives elected by us, the American people, to be leading us, you know, on our most pressing problems. And if we don't get the environment right, if we don't get, you know, enough clean energy sources, you know, what else is going to be possible? Certainly not growth, certainly not innovation, certainly not prosperity. You know, as the late David Brower said, there's no jobs on a dead planet. So every time people talk about we've got to, you know, deal with unemployment and the economy first, as if somehow the environment is separate from that. And, you know, look at green jobs sector growing fastest in California anyway. This has to be all part of the mix. It has to be factored in. And as I say often, Mother Nature is letting us know she's not waiting until we get our act together.
And Betsy, doesn't that just underscore the point that environmental protection and economic growth are not enemies of one another? They're not mutually exclusive. They can go hand in hand. And indeed, a cleaner environment and a cleaner planet is one that stimulates job creation, innovation, and investment, just as we're seeing in the renewable energy field, as you mentioned. It does not set our economy back. It does not put us at a disadvantage relative to other societies. And it does put us in a position where we can minimize the damage that will be done not only to our own people but to other nations as well. And I think that's the imperative of the 21st century, to stop, if you will, externalizing the costs associated with abusing our environment and pricing those into our economy rather than paying the consequences on the back end in the form of disease, in the form of flooding, in the form of the disastrous weather events, and certainly in the form of the loss of lives as we pursue relentlessly ever greater quantities of fossil fuels that are the you know, are the source of our greenhouse gases. We can use those fuels much more efficiently as we undertake the transition that we must embark upon if we're going to leave a planet in any semblance of good shape for future generations. We have an obligation to do that. We also unquestionably have the know-how to do that. We need to get on with the job.
And yet, while they're still calculating the unbelievable damage to life and property with the weekend tornadoes and twisters that went through the heartland in North Carolina, just yesterday, the Supreme Court justices signaled that they will throw out a global warming lawsuit brought by California and five other states that is seeking limits on carbon pollution from coal-fired power plants. So just as we most need to crack down on CO2 emissions, there are, you know, efforts not only legislatively but in the courts to undo progress. And that's the kind of thing that I can't help but notice. What's wrong with this picture? This is the same newspaper. This is this morning's paper talking about the damage toll from the perhaps climate change-infused storms, and yet we're going exactly in the wrong direction.
A majority of the justices yesterday, you're right, you're exactly right, Betsy, did question, although they haven't ruled yet, but they did in oral argument question the idea that a federal court should actually be setting pollution levels. They seem to feel that that's the job for EPA. And the, at least
guess what? What's wrong with this picture? They won't let the EPA do its job either.
And there we actually have some good news anyway, which is that a couple of years ago in 2007, the Supreme Court came out and said that EPA does have authority to regulate carbon emissions, the one of the principal actors, principal villains in greenhouse gas pollution, global warming, and directed EPA to get on with the job of assessing whether or not that carbon is posing a hazard. And EPA did that, did find that it's a hazard, and is moving forward with doing something to about it, just as they do to regulate other pollutants from burning fossil fuels. It is that authority that is now at risk as members of the House of Representatives are demanding that the authority be taken away from EPA to regulate CO2, carbon dioxide. So,
can't have it both ways, folks. Can't have it both ways.
Yeah,
you know,
they
don't want the legislation, and they want to emasculate the EPA from doing its job.
And again, this is part of this seemingly religious warfare in which the science gets left on the sidelines, and meanwhile the planet slowly cooks.
Which, last time I checked, means we're all in hot water. And unlike the frog in the boiling pot of water, we don't have any place to hop off to. Don't these people, as I often say, have children, have a conscience, think about their grandchildren, not to mention beyond, seven generations we're supposed to be thinking about? This is what keeps me awake at night. What will it take, I guess, you know, if we needed people over the years, the 13 years I've been covering the Green Beat, you know, been pretty lonely out there, mainstream media. I would hear from friends, or at least people I knew. I really kind of lost some friends in this dozen years of activism because I don't understand their see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, but mostly listen, no listening. They're saying it will take a crisis, Betsy, to get people to pay attention. It will, you know, that's what it's going to take. And I was counting them on my hands back then. You know, now there's more than one could count. I mean, we're talking crises, right? If you call BP and the coal mine disaster, that were crises for the people and the families who died, certainly environmental catastrophe. Look what's going on still in Japan. What will it take? And yet, at this particular moment, it's the opposite of what one would expect, what logic would dictate.
I wish I knew what it would take to get some of the opponents of action to stop defending their position and join those of us who understand that we can move forward with environmental protection without compromising job creation and economic growth. What will it take is such a hard question to answer because we will continue to have both environmental and man-made catastrophes. Some of them will be the result of or exacerbated by our practices as people particularly in modern and industrialized economies, and some of them will be less connected to those activities. And so if the only path forward is that we're going to continue to argue over whose fault this is and whether or not Mother Nature is actually playing a role, the largest role, or whether we're exacerbating those problems, I think then it's a pretty bleak future. But I also think that one of the things about our society is that sooner or later people notice what's going on. And among the people who have noticed are the investment community who have stood up in the last few years and said that there are jobs to be created and growth to be built around new companies that are springing up to build that new clean energy future that we're all hoping for and talking about. At the same time, I think we are seeing a newfound determination to ensure that even as we're carrying out activities from our traditional energy sources like offshore oil and gas drilling, that we are going to demand that there be the equipment necessary to sharply limit the extent of any future disasters. There are probably going to be some, but we can never, I think, tolerate a situation in which we could have 3 months of continuously flowing oil into the precious Gulf of Mexico or any other delicate environment like that without having the equipment necessary to stop the flow, contain and collect the oil, and protect not only workers, but our environment and our economy at the same time. So
as we approach the 41st anniversary of Earth Day, we've come a long way, but...
A lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do, and we certainly cannot afford to take one step forward and two steps back, not anymore. And let's hope that this is a confluence of events that will, in our next half hour, we're going to be getting excerpts from PowerShift 2011. I don't know if you followed that, but most inspiring. Some 10,000 young people gathered and great speeches by Bill McKibben of 350.org. We're going to be playing those, so we're going to renew the hope here. And if nothing else, young people are not going to remain silent. And hallelujah.
And what good news that is. Well said, Betsy. Thank you.
Don't we need it? And yet what I say is we baby boomers cannot allow them to shoulder all the burden. We need to do our part to start turning the ship around. And so I don't let my friends off the hook, and I don't think anybody should be off the hook, especially anyone who has children, grown or otherwise, in this world. And that's a lot of us. So let's keep the pressure on. Thank you for sharing your insights on this Earth Day anniversary, and anniversary, of course, of the BP oil spill / kill, and lots of other events happening before and after that to capture our attention. Let's hope we humans are paying attention long enough to wake up and smell the carbon, and can't quite say happy Earth Day, but let's observe it every day, of course. Those of us who think the Earth is worth preserving and certainly think the human race is worth keeping around, we better start tuning into our environment a little bit more carefully.
Perfect words for Earth Day, and we have a responsibility, and we're delighted to see young people coming along who are taking up that responsibility as their own. So well said, and I'm with you.
Thank you, and thank you to the Environmental Defense Fund for all the great work you do. We've been speaking with L.G. Holston. He is the Senior Director of Strategic Planning for EDF. And check them out online if you'd like to get daily dispatches, or it seems like every day they're in my inbox, along with a lot of other wonderful environmental organizations. You can stay up to date on what's happening in your world. It's important. We need to treat our planet, nature, as if she matters, because the last time I checked, it does matter, at least for those of us who eat, breathe, or drink. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get an infusion of hope and inspiration from PowerShift 2011. Stay with us. You're listening to Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front.
Just come.